Welcome to the Learning Minds podcast, the official podcast of Faber Medical College. I'm your host, Wahab Zia, a proud member of the class of 2025. Join me as we dive into the world of medical innovation, uncover insights from the leading experts, and explore the inspiring journeys of those shaping the future of healthcare and research. In this episode, we are honored to welcome Professor Dr. Mohammad Irfan, a renowned figure in psychiatry and mental health. He is the chair of the Department of Mental Health and Psychiatry at Peshawar Medical College and the director of research at Prime Foundation. Dr. Irfan holds key international roles, including president-elect of the World Association of Cultural Psychiatry, and has pioneered culturally adapted interventions in mental health, particularly in low- and middle-income countries. A prolific researcher with numerous publications in top-tier journals, Dr. Irfan has contributed significantly to global psychiatry and behavioral sciences. Today, we will discuss his journey in psychiatry, his leadership in research, and his vision for the future of the field. We are really grateful to have you, Dr. Irfan.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for having me here. It's an honor to come to my alma mater all the time. So I'm looking forward to our discussion today.
All right. Dr. Irfan, back in the 90s, psychiatry was often less popular than other medical specialties. What inspired you to choose psychiatry during that time?
As for the specialty is concerned, since I graduated in 2002, the selection process came afterwards. Of course, after the house job and internship, that you may call it. So it came afterwards. But when I was deciding, this was, I think, my medical school time. And if I see in retrospect, I was always interested in the neuroanatomies and psychopharmacologies. But when I came to the community health sciences part of medical school curriculum, I was astonished to see that a lot of work in community, or now I would call it public health because I'm also a designated professor of public health as well, is based on something that is everything related to psychology or psychiatry. And this made me come very close to mental health in general. I would not call it psychiatry at that time because I was not fully aware that I'm going to select psychiatry as a career. However, mental health in general, which sometime embarked on things related to neurology or neural part of the brain, I would say, in looking at the retrospect, was there. It was when I started my clinical work in the house job or internship that I realized that, and my seniors also realized, that my dealing with the patient style is different from the routine dealing in a medical unit. I was doing my house job internship in a medical unit to start with. At that time, there were 6 months medical and allied and 6 months surgery and allied house job like now, but that was fully 6 months in one unit, that is medicine. And 6 months in surgery. So when I was in medicine, so they realized that I was working differently and dealing differently with patients. And I was, of course, very involved with the patient care than just diagnosing and treating patients. And this has transformed my way of thinking in many ways. And you can also say that this has also imparted my ways towards research as well. So this has been something that you can say as a start. However, when I was taking this as a specialty choice, then there were some obstacles and hurdles as well. But that we can discuss sometime. Or maybe you can, you can ask me about it if you have the time.
Oh, that's great. Our next question is quite similar, which is every career has its challenges, especially in the field like psychiatry. So what obstacles did you encounter early in your psychiatry career and how did you overcome them?
So as I was mentioning, I mean, I'm glad that it went that way. The obstacles that were in the career, the foremost obstacle was to take this as a career. So at that time, when you were to tell someone that you are interested in psychiatry and you want to take this as a career, they would question your mental health first. That are you sane enough to decide to take psychiatry as a specialty? Because at that time, unfortunately, this was a thought that only those people who have tried their luck in other fields and have not been successful, they end up in minor specialties like psychiatry as an alternate thought. So when I was convinced that I'm going to go in psychiatry, I was forced with this thought that why not anything else? You can do better in other things. Why are you taking this? At this moment, I must tell you that except for my father, who was very open about it, and he said, whatever you want to do, all others, they, in one way or the other, tried to convince me to let go of psychiatry and take something else. This might include those who were closer to mental health themselves. But we are talking about stigma to patients nowadays. At that moment, I must say that it was stigma for a medical student to take psychiatry as a specialty as well. So this was the biggest obstacle because I thought, what is this thing? If I'm asking 100 people, no one just going to give me a go-ahead in psychiatry. That was the biggest obstacle. Other than that, there were other obstacles which we come across nowadays as well. There will be less opportunities in some specialties where you have lesser opportunities to get the training and get along with your future specialty direction. These are common obstacles that we used to have. One last would be the stigma thing. And that is, it is still there. Much reduced, awareness is quite high now. So the stigma was that patients would try to conceal themselves while visiting your OPD or while visiting you in your office in psychiatry so that other people might not know. So this was quite high at this time. I'm still aware of the fact that this still happens, but at that time that was really high. So these were some of the challenges that I think of at the moment that I faced starting this career in psychiatry.
And how did you overcome them?
So first, very straightforwardly, I asked myself, and I still do that every now and then, that what do I want to do? What will make me happy? What is the one thing that will make me go in a direction where it gives me its own drive? And I thought, this is it. I want to do that. If everyone is not interested or they don't give me the green signal, why would I think that way? Why not think differently? So that's the overcoming part of it. The overcoming part of the last, the middle one, I'm sure administrative problems still exist. Sometimes the challenges of getting specialty trainings are less. That is something that we will always have. Sometimes people will be more, sometimes slots will be more, and there will be a contrast. The last one is still an attempt. We are still trying to increase the awareness to make the stigma as less as possible. And that is where we are working. Mental health is on the priority for people now. I think times have changed. Things have improved. But this does not mean that there is no room for further improvement. This means that we can improve it further. So all up for it, geared up. I'm always looking forward to our young generation to work on that, to be partner with them, and to move in the right direction. Because if we convince one, we consider them as an ambassador to convince many more. This is what I feel we should be doing, and I'm trying my bit in this direction.
That's really inspiring. Despite having all those obstacles, still opting for your own career, that's great. Now, Dr. Irfan, my next question is, how has the field of psychiatry changed since you first started practicing? What key aspects drew you to the specialty, and how have they evolved over time?
The change that I have seen in the last 20 years or so, the change has come in many ways, not in psychiatry, but in general as well. But the opportunities of diagnosing and treatment are multiplied. Plus, the focus is much more on the holistic approach and not just pinpointing a diagnosis and just focusing on the pharmacological avenues to work on it, right? So if we say that there is this holistic approach, I was talking about it earlier as well, that we are now talking about integration in each and everything. So now it has become more integrative. This integration has helped in many ways. One, in alleviating stigma, because when there is integration, so less stigmatic. Second, how would I say that? This is something I wanted to elaborate. Now, a lot of physical illnesses are coupled with psychiatric problems, right? Previously, these two were considered on a very side ends. Now, the gut-brain axis, the somatic symptomatization of psychiatric disorders, these are all in consideration while we deal with these patients. Not only us, but with the passage of time, our colleagues in sister specialties, they have also realized the importance and they have also embarked on the journey, right? Also, the internationally speaking, we are looking at the perspectives of genetic level diagnostics and further researches in many ways that have changed and evolved the specialty. So this is a big change that I feel. Similar to that, as I was explaining, the focus is not only on medication. The psychopharmacology is not the only thing that we are considering. Non-pharmacological interventions that involve psychosocial approaches, these are also in consideration. Various therapies, various attributes that lead to diagnosis and management are also in practice now. We talk about a lot of therapies. We talk about cognitive behavior therapy. We talk about other therapies that work, eye movement desensitization, reprocessing. So these are all in practice now. And other than that, involvement of family, involvement of peers, these are considered. Above all, one thing that I feel is improving and we should focus more on it is the fact that there will be some chronic illnesses, including some in psychiatry as well. The focus on improving the quality of life is something that people are considering now, and this should be considered even more. So these are some changes that I could say that I've been seeing in the last 2 decades or so.
Oh, all right, sir. Human behaviors, and you have been considered as an expert of the behavioral sciences as well. So how do you approach behavior and problem solving in your practice? Can you share any memorable experiences that highlight the importance of understanding human behavior in addressing the mental health challenges?
Mental health cannot be separated from behavior. That is why whenever we talk about the name of a department, they say it is psychiatry and behavioral sciences. Or for elaboration, my department is mental health, psychiatry and behavioral sciences. So this means that behavior is a integral part of being mentally healthy. So I have always been of the opinion that if we have to see someone in a disturbed way, we need to look at the perspective of their behavior, because this will be obvious in their behavior. Once that is there, this means that there is something that is changing their behavior. There are two possible options. One, there is something organic. Of course, for organic, we need to rule out the organic causes and treat them accordingly. If that is not organic or inorganic, then this means it based on psychological aspects. Then we need to work on the psychological aspects and the root causes of those psychological aspects that have caused that. Unless we know about the root cause of a problem, how can we solve that problem? This is something that has always been my consideration and my practice. And that is where I always talk to people, whether in my clinical practice, whether talking to my students, whether talking to my residents, whether talking to my colleagues. I've always been of the opinion that first, find out the problem. If you find out the problem, the solution becomes half done. That is where comes the problem-solving approach. So if you focus that the problem that you see is basing on behavior, then there is some disturbance. You rule out the exact cause. You pinpoint the exact cause to be exact. You pinpointed it, and you then found out the reason, the factors, the implicating agents, and then you address those. And that is where you will lead to problem solving. This is, I believe, something that we always consider. As far as the example is concerned, I mean, there can be a lot of examples, starting from very basics, starting from the basics of behavioral development. The behavior development starts from very beginning, and then it shapes up into someone's personality. And we think about someone doing one activity in a particular way. And if we are judgmental, we will say, why is that happening? Or why someone is doing that? Or if our approach is the one that I'm referring to, the problem solving, then we would say that we need to find out something to help him. And that's where we tend to find out the reason behind it. So in our practice, we commonly see people having problems with obsessional tendencies. We would think of, and this is very common, that we think of that why this is happening. What has led them to have these tendencies? And these reasons will give us the opportunity to find out the cause. Examples can be many in other ways as well. Problem-solving approaches are differently pronounced. For example, for someone having problems dealing with their peers, with their family members. So problem-solving approaches will be how to deal with them in a better way. The most recent recall that I can have is the approach that I always feel fond of is to ask someone to fit in someone else's shoes and think of their dealing with you as they are dealing with you, but you put yourself in their shoes and see how will you deal with yourself if you were in their shoes. And if we consider that there are genuine problems that someone is having, then whether this is possible that we give them the advantage of having a handicap? Have you played golf?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I have not played in real, but I have played in like the...
Right. So when you start a golf game, everyone starts with a different handicap.
Yeah.
Why is that? This is because at the beginning, they want everyone to be at the same level. So if you, in life, consider that someone that you have a conflict with or you have a problem with is not able to do something, can you give them the handicap of starting at a different level? Can you think of the aspect that this is what their shortcoming is? If someone has a shortcoming, has a handicap, they are not capable of doing something, can you give them the edge? Can you feel that empathy that you have been talking about? If you can do that, problems are solved.
That's great. That's such a great discussion, Dr. Irfan. The audience will love to hear this in the podcast. Dr. Irfan, you have made significant contributions to psychiatric research alongside your clinical practice. How do you balance these two aspects of your career? And what do you envision for the future of psychiatric research?
Balance is a difficult task. That's an honest answer. When you work here and the time when I started my research journey, that's quite a long journey. My first research project, as for most, will be the fourth year research project that we normally do with community health sciences. That is 2.5 decades ago. So my research journey was a long one in terms of the possibility of the opportunities that we used to have at that time, very scarce. But we kept on because of our interest. And I got my first publication when I was doing my house job internship. So this was somewhat unique at that time. People would not consider that. And I became the editor of a journal in exactly 2 decades' time by now. And that was my first year of specialized training in psychiatry. So that was astonishing as well, because the challenge was my close friends and people who knew me, and they would ask me, why are you doing this? Is this giving you any financial benefit? Is this helping you in any way? Because at that time, no one thought that there is any significance to that. So these were the initial challenges from where we started. But those challenges, if people consider as limitations, they would stay back. And if you consider them as the opportunities, then you will
overcome your country.
Overcome those barriers. You will overcome the gap and you will fill it. And you will say that I have to do it. And then this, once you start on it, you start enjoying that. This is never ending. In terms of my interest, Initially, of course, you try to find out your interest in a specialty. And I tried that and did a lot of work in a diverse way. But then I came to understand that my interest revolves around cultural aspects of psychiatry. My research interests involve around non-pharmacological intervention in psychiatry. And lately, it has been transformed to e-health and m-health with more digital interventions coming across. In this way, I've been awarded various awards nationally and internationally, including I'm the only Pakistani who got the award from American Psychiatric Associations on digital interventions in mental health in 2015. These have evolved around it. And these research interests have taken me towards another aspect of work, which is developing self-help books. I've authored now 3 self-help books in Urdu for common mental disorders. And this has been the only self-help books to my knowledge in Pakistan. And these self-help books that are based on my research work, based on culturally adapted interventions, have paved not only the path for help to people, but the basic work has helped many people, including people in the Gulf, in China, and in other places, to utilize those culturally adapted interventions framework to do their research as well. So this is something that is on the cards, and I feel there's potential for much more. I'm just back from World Association of Cultural Psychiatry International Congress in Paris last week, and they were very interested in our work being translated for less developed countries because it was international congress. So people with lesser facilities and lesser developed countries would need more of such work. They were interested in translating that work, not translating in terms of just language translation, but since this is a culturally adapted work, how do they translate and transform it for their population as well? So this is something that has been my area. In general, in psychiatric research, there are much more. Genetic research, as I've already talked about, is on the rise. Then newer molecules have been introduced. With artificial intelligence, a lot of work that is based on the interpolation of further aspects, further variables is on the cards. So sky's the limit. There is a lot that is happening and will happen.
That's great. Dr. Irfan, you have held prominent roles in various international and European Asian societies, including leadership positions in academic publishing and as editor-in-chief of several prestigious journals. These roles have surely enhanced your professional experience. Could you share how these opportunities came about and how your involvement in these international communities has influenced your career?
So I must admit that they have shaped me to what I am at the moment. Of course, they've helped a lot in shaping me. Come along, these will be separate stories because I've been working on diverse areas, and these diverse areas would not be just for the roles in a leadership position or something, but these came all the way along. I'm currently, as you introduced me, I'm the president-elect, the only Pakistani to be, or I would say, the only non-European, non-Asian, non-American person to be the president-elect of World Association of Cultural Psychiatry. And I never thought about, more than a decade ago, there was a congress where I was invited to present my culturally adapted intervention work. I went there and presented my work, did a workshop. And once I was done with my presentation and workshop, the then president asked me, why don't you sign up for our membership, general membership? So I said, okay, I'll become the member. And sometime later, they asked me, we are formulating a special interest group of culturally adapted interventions, and why don't you lead that group? Fine, that is my interest work. I'm doing that. I'll lead that. In the meanwhile, I was working. At that time, my first book was about to be published, and by the time they made me the special interest group the chair, my second book was coming. All good. And then, years later, they said, we want you to be one of the few directors from the world. Asia is one director, Southeast Asia. And we want you to run that election. And because now developed liaison with them, I said, okay, I'll stand for the position. And I stood for the position, and somehow I won that. I became a director.
All good.
Never thought that director meant that I'm working in this area, considered it after area it is, and I'm happy working in it and working with other regions in the area. And then the next election came and the overall cabinet was happy with my production of work, because at that time we published a lot of randomized controlled trials for our work. And then I was asked to stand again by friends, and I stood again. And then from the cabinet, they decided to put my name, suggest my name for the competition of president-elect. And somehow I won that competition as well. So that was something, a journey that came along. Similar is the journey with Asian CBT Association and Asian Cognitive Behavioral Therapy Association. I was doing a lot of cognitive behavioral work. My PhD work is also a mixed method work, which is qualitative work in developing culturally adapted policies for Pashto-speaking people. And I was fortunate enough to work on that. And then my work was recognized on various scales, and I got some awards on that. And I was working with Pakistan Association of Cognitive Therapists. And with the passage of time, I was given positions, various positions, and I got the post of president. And by virtue of being president, I was in the president's group of the Asian CBT Association. And in that Asian CBT president's group, they elected four people for four positions. And because of my interest in research and being there in that group, I was elected as the Director of Research and Innovation of Asian CBT Association. And earlier this year, our Congress was in New Delhi, and somehow the relation, due to the our external tiers with India, I could not get the visa and I could not go. In my absence, they have re-elected me for that position again. So there's my inclination with this. The other area that you have mentioned is the association with various journals. That has been long, as I said. 2005 was the year when I was the first, when I first became the editor. And then I was part of various editorial positions nationally and internationally. And earlier in 2010, afterwards, I was a lot interested, and I talk a lot about publication ethics, because I feel like I talked about it today as well, that I am totally of the opinion that we need to do research, but we need to do it with ethics. So I started following Committee on Publication Ethics, the pioneer body of publication ethics around the globe. And I was a participant in their discussions about what ethics should be applied in what cases. And there are various discussion groups, and I started participating there. And then some colleagues over there, they asked me to stand for the council position for Committee on Publication Ethics. And I was fortunate enough to be the second Asian, only second Asian at that time. From the whole Asia, there was only one person before me who was ever elected. He was from Iran. He's now based in Canada. So I was became the second Asian to be the council member of Committee on Publication Ethics. And this went on, and I was part of World Association of Medical Editors and Eastern Mediterranean Association of Medical Editors as a member. And then various position in the Pakistan Association of Medical Editors as well. And currently I'm serving as the president of Pakistan Association of Medical Editors. So this is another aspect that I've been following. And there can be a few more, but the list will be somewhat long. So I'll stop here. So these have been the journeys and my association with the various aspects of my interest. These are all my interests. I cannot say that my only interest is A or B or C. These are all my interests. And that's why I feel that God has been kind, that I've been successful, because I was following my interests only. I was not saying that this is for this purpose, this is for that purpose. These are my interests. I wanted to go on in my interest and give it my best shot. And when you give your best shots, sometimes it becomes obvious that your best shot is obvious to other people as well. And then people give you the credit. So there it is.
It's all about not letting the opportunity go off.
That's true. But I would say that it's more about doing your things. If you just say that there is a position, I'll apply for it and I'll go for it, but you are not ready with your homework, your spade work at the beginning, I would not say that you are okay to go for that opportunity. Because if you go for that opportunity, and people will see that on what basis he's here for that opportunity, then you will be at a loss.
So as an influential figure in academia, what final advice do you have for young researchers or medical students?
Influential figure, I won't say that, but as a student of research and someone who has been following research and be a part of research for quite a long time, I would always think that the main thing that drives research is to ask questions. If you have the ability to ask questions, you can go along. If you have an inquisitive mind, and people sometimes ask me, how do you find that objective? How do we find that question, research question on which we are going to do research? I'm astonished to listen to that question. The questions are all around us. The questions are not somewhere hidden. These are treasures that we can find out from a closet or something. The questions are all around us. We do something, we are stuck, we ask ourselves this. And this is what happens. If this is medically tuned, if this is tuned towards some way where it affects our practice, it affects the lives, our lives, or the lives of the patient, it affects our practices or our practices that are disturbing someone else. These are all questions. So I would say that they should be a thinker, they should be someone who reason, they should be someone who questions, because if you question and you question the right way, you're doing the right research. Yes, you may need guidance. We've talked about mentorship. We've talked about guiding young minds. Yes, but I'm always of the opinion that you should be someone who come up with the question. If you think that someone else will think for you, I would not be convinced that you can go a long way, because this will stop. It is not your passion. It is not your question. It is not something coming from your heart. So that is where I feel that things might be compromised. And I think that this is what I've been teaching, and this is what has been my vision for the future as well, that I want to have people who think about research in an open way. And that is what I feel that I want people who think about psychiatry in an open way to find out if they are interested. To find out if they are interested, they would take that as a career. To find out if they are interested and they take it as a career, they have the passion to deal with it as a passionate person, because this is where it is going to be beneficial for them in a longer run. For short term, anything can give you benefits. But for long run, only those things will benefit you for which you have the passion. So this is what I feel.
Oh, that's really great. And we are really honored to have Dr. Irfan in this podcast. And the audience would love to listen to it. Thank you so much, Dr. Irfan. And that's it with the episode.
Thank you very much for having me.